Welcome to Educate and Rejuvenate the podcast, the show that helps you teach and live well. I'm Kelsey Sorensen, a former classroom teacher, current homeschool mom, and a proud Teacher Goals author. I'm on a mission to help educators of all kinds not just survive, but thrive. Are you ready to educate and rejuvenate? Let's go.
Okay, looks like we're not going live on Instagram because I forgot to get the stream key.
I can edit it quick.
Rebecca, do you want to introduce yourself a little bit and then I can make sure I fix that?
Yes,
absolutely. There's always a text something, I swear.
It's always something. If it's not that, it's, I'm going to share my screen, and then nothing happens when you share your screen. Yeah. Hi, my name is Rebecca Poe. I'm also a Teacher Goals author, just like Kelsey. My book is called Blueprint for Inclusion. I have been a special education teacher for 13 years. I'm old now, so it all kind of
runs. You are not old.
I don't know how long I've actually been doing this. It feels like a lifetime. But yeah, I'm really excited to be here and to talk with you about what's working in inclusive classrooms, and hopefully we can get some teachers excited for the school year.
Yes, I'm so thrilled that we are here together on the podcast today because Rebecca, she's been one of our speakers at Educate and Rejuvenate since the first time we did it. I think you've been at every single event that we've done.
I think so.
And yet, this is the first time I'm interviewing you. I'm like, how is this happening? Really? I'm pretty sure it is. Like,
I feel like we've done so much.
I know. It's so weird. No, I scrolled through. I was like, you know what? Have I actually had Rebecca on the podcast? So they went and like scrolled through my feed. I'm like, no, I really don't think so. Like, how is that a thing? Like,
well, we're fixing it now.
Yes. So I'm so glad you're here. And also thrilled about your book, Blueprint for Inclusion, that is now out and available. And you can find it on Amazon, Target, Barnes & Noble online. Good morning. Good evening, wherever you're at. I know we have to remember we are worldwide, right? Sometimes us Americans, we get like, you know, oh yeah, it's like this for everybody. But I was chatting with Ashley from Rainbow Sky last week, and she's in Australia. And so it's like, you know, even a different day usually for them than for us over here.
Yeah.
So fun. Okay. When you're here, please pop into the chat. Let us know you're here. You'll be entered in to win a Starbucks gift card when you comment. And if you have any questions for Rebecca, I have questions outlined, but we love bringing on your questions too.
Yes, so. Absolutely.
Yes, I will pull them up on the screen and we'll answer your questions. So hello, Debbie. Hello. It's a good classroom conversation. Yes, that's what we're here for.
We're
excited for that. Hello, another Debbie. I love it.
Hi, Debbie. I just talked to Debbie earlier today and sent her out the link. So I'm happy she was able to join.
Amazing. I'm glad you made it, Debbie. So fun. Well, today we are talking about what works in inclusive classrooms, because as soon as I knew I was interviewing Rebecca, I'm like, we have to talk about inclusion, right? Like, I mean, that's just like a given. Hello, Linda. Hello, Bethany. So happy to see you two here. So today we're going to dive into the mindset shifts that helps us switch from compliance to confidence. I feel like that is a big part of what we're going to talk about today. And one of your go-to strategies, you're going to give a sneak peek of what is in your Educate and Rejuvenate session and practical examples. And we're going to answer your questions today. Hello, Denise. Hello, Kristen. I love recording in a live studio. So if you're here live, make sure you say hi in the chat. I'm seeing that number go up and more of you joining us. So make sure to say hi in the chat. And again, you're entered in to win a Starbucks gift card when you comment, when you come to these podcast episodes live. So make sure that you do that. And if you have a question, pop that in the chat as well. We will be taking live questions in addition to the outline that we have today. So this is your opportunity. If you have any questions about inclusion, which don't we all, whether you're in general education or special education, right, Rebecca?
I still have questions that
I know.
Look at. I think it's an ever evolving situation that we just always have to try to keep learning, keep growing.
Keep learning, keep growing, lean on each other, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Because when we come together, and like we were talking about, Rebecca and I were chatting a little bit before we hit go live. And sometimes we really just need validation that, yeah, I am doing the right things. And this is just taking more time or more effort or you know, we need a little more patience with it than we thought. Yeah. And so sometimes even just like, oh yeah, I am headed in the right direction. I am doing the right things. Here's one little tweak I can do is all we need for a little mindset shift. Okay, so let's start here. What do you think that teachers get right about inclusion? And where do we still get stuck when it comes to engaging our learners?
So I think what we're getting right is that the desire is there. There is not a teacher that I've met that has been against inclusion. Like, we all want that for our students. We want them to be taught where they deserve to be taught. We want the opportunity for them to learn from us and for us to teach them. I think where we get stuck is there's not a lot of active training for that. We hear the word inclusion as a buzzword a lot in education, mm-hmm. education, but it's like, okay, we want to do this. What does that look like? Because I've said for years, you can't just take a student with an IEP, put them in a general education classroom and call it inclusion. It's not just about location. It's about being fully integrated and really making sure that each student feels like they're belonging. And that desire is there in the teachers to do that. But how do we do that, I think, is where a lot of the hang up comes, because it can be overwhelming to think, okay, I've got 5 students with IEPs in this classroom. How do I make sure that they're being fully included and learning and having the same opportunities? Where do you go? Who do you talk to about that?
Right. And I love what you said about the desire being there. Like, yes, like that is the first right step, right? If we're like, I have this desire to make sure all my students are included. But like you said, it's not just about location. I think that's a great way to think about it. It's not just about, oh yeah, we have our students in the gen ed classroom. It's having it fully integrated and each child having what they need. So exactly. I love that. I love seeing your comments in the chat. I think we're seeing some questions come in too. So I'm going to star those and we'll come back to them very shortly. So please get your questions in the chat. We're just going to go over the very basics here of what we want to talk about today, and then we'll dive into your questions. How does that sound?
I'm seeing like they're looking pretty good too, those questions.
I know. These questions are gold.
Those are good. So, questions.
Keep them coming. Everybody who has a question, I'm starring it, so we're not going to forget. So pop them into the chat. We're going to get to all of your questions. So can't wait. So there is also a difference between compliance and motivation. I want to make sure we touch on these few things before we get to the questions so we can answer them from this place, right? So how do you define the kind of real buy-in that we're aiming for in inclusive classrooms?
So when I like you talking about the difference between compliance and motivation, because compliance, yes, it's being like the thing you're asking is being done. The assignment is being done. The student's participating, but they're not bought in. They're going through the motions, and compliance can make things easy because you don't have to worry about a big disruption. If they're complying, they're not disrupting, but are they actually learning? Are they being motivated to learn and engage? So a big difference between the two is motivation is going to make sure that the student is an active participant. Compliance is kind of going through the motions, like I said, and the real learning happens when the student is motivated and engaged. And I have a whole section in my book on motivating those. Yeah. I call them reluctant learners. A lot of times they'd rather be anywhere, rather be doing
anything
else. But if we can get those students bought in with something that they're interested in, meeting them where they are rather than where we'd like them to be, that's going to lay a better foundation just to get them to buy into the classroom a little bit more than just demanding compliance.
Yeah, I love the way you explain that and how it's really not like with compliance. It's like, yeah, I just want you to check these things off, right? It's almost like seeing it more robotically than like, yeah, these are actual little humans, like, or depending on how old they are, they might be bigger humans. We are, you know, they're living, breathing human beings, and they have their, like, if they're reluctant, it's kind of like getting underneath that. What is that? Why? What is that reason that they're feeling that way?
Yeah.
And, you know, just not seeing it just as checking boxes. And even if, like, I think sometimes we put the, like, checking all the boxes as a priority, when really it would be better to have two boxes checked, but, oh, they were fully bought into that. And we built that relationship, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's not about the boxes.
It's not about the boxes. It's about the people.
Yes.
It's about the kids. Kids aren't boxes. We've got to teach, teach to the kid, not to the box. Yes. That might be, like, that could be a whole article. I might write that later.
I love it. I can't wait. I'll be watching for it. Yeah. Teach to the box. Or not. No, don't teach to the box.
Don't teach to the box. Teach to the student. Don't teach to the student. Box.
Yes. Watch for it, everybody. Watch Rebecca's Instagram.
It'll be out soon.
Tag me in it. Okay, so you mentioned in your session, because as we mentioned, a lot of you have joined us since the beginning. Rebecca is also, she is an incredible author. I mean, so many things you do, but another thing you were doing is you were speaking at our Educate and Rejuvenate event. Again, it's your fourth summer with us. And she will be teaching four key elements for motivating those reluctant learners in your classroom. We're not going to have time to get into all four of those, especially with all the amazing questions coming in, but can you tease one of those that teachers could try out and learn just right from this episode today?
Yeah. So the one that I want to kind of focus on a little bit today is authenticity. Because I think so often teachers go into the classroom and it's like, I'm the teacher. I can't show that I have big feelings. Like, you want everything to go just so. Yeah. You want to stay in control and in, you know, regulated yourself. Students know, all students from tiny, tiny kindergartners to high schoolers, especially high schoolers, they know when you're full of crap.
They do.
They do. And they're, if they don't think they're seeing the real you, if they're not seeing the person, you can't have a relationship with a title or with a role. You have to have a relationship with a person. So as much as you can, be authentically you. If that looks like, for me, I have anxiety, depression, and ADHD. I take medication for those every single day. My kids know I have ADHD. And they know about some of the other things. I don't tell them deeply personal stories, but they know I have ADHD because I'll be authentic with them and model for them. Like, okay, I'm getting off track. I'm losing my focus. we gotta bring it back in. And they're much more quickly to follow me back to being reined in if I'm upfront and honest with them about, okay, I'm losing my focus. Let's take we gotta regroup. They're like, okay, yeah, we are out of focus. We need to get back into this, rather than if I'm just like, you guys are being too loud. We're not talking about this right now. If I try to come at it from a place of I'm the authority, then I get a lot of pushback. But if I come from a place of authenticity, the kids learn to see me as a person that is a helper to them, is someone who does teach them, but someone also that they can go to and they can be themselves around. You have to have that authenticity, not only to show your students, but to get back from them. Cause that's how, like we said, that's how you teach to the student and not the box.
Yes. And I love that how you talked about, and it goes both ways, right? We aren't just a teacher. Like, we don't connect with as a role of teacher. We connect as a fellow person.
Yeah.
And so it goes both ways. We're not teaching to a box. And also we need to not just be that box of I'm a teacher, I'm the authority because they said so, all of that, right? That's not going to help us in building those relationships with our students and helping them learn and grow. And there have been some great, great comments here. Let me share. Bethany said that without motivation, it can sometimes be literally impossible for a kid with ADHD to learn. Compliance can be a dream.
And to speak to that a little bit, I want to tell just a very quick story. When I was getting my, when I was doing my master's in special education, I had to do some student observations, and I went into another teacher's classroom and was watching a certain boy. The teacher's doing the lesson. This kid has his notebook, his pencil. He's very like into what's happening. He's not being disruptive. He's not talking to people around him. She never had to call him out. But he wasn't actually doing any of the work. He was drawing. He didn't take any of the notes on the board. He wasn't causing a problem. He wasn't being disruptive. He wasn't disrupting the learning of others and interrupting the teacher, but he was not learning himself. So we have to make sure that if we're focusing on compliance, yeah, he's sitting there, he's quiet, he gives the appearance of being engaged, but there's no learning happening, even though there's no behavior. And I think a lot of times it's those kids that we miss because they just kind of fly under the radar. So yeah, they have to be motivated. And for him, he loved drawing. Something that you could do as that child's teacher is have him, you know, doodle his notes, make a comic book about whatever subject you're teaching, use what is interesting to him and what motivates him to get him to be engaged and an active participant in the classroom. So yeah, compliance should not be the goal.
No. Connection over compliance every time.
Every time.
Yes, I love, we educators are the facilitator, 100%.
Absolutely.
And again, we have a lot of us can relate to the ADHD. Hannah says, fellow ADHDer here, the off-task struggle is real. Oh, and Maria says, this is true. Kids can tell when you're being authentic and do not respond to it. Individuals with dementia are the same. You have to go where they are and not try to make them come to your level.
And presume competence. Presume that they're going to be able to understand. Talk to them as, you know, as people, not as just kids. Like, don't talk down to them, I think, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I think that makes a huge difference. So a lot of teachers, like, and we've been touching on this, but we feel like we have to fix behavior before we can teach. So, but you flipped that script in your approach. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
So one thing that I've always said forever is, you know, students come to us not knowing how to read. They come to us not knowing how to do multiplication. Some of them come to us not knowing how to self-regulate. They come to us not knowing how to manage these big feelings and big emotions that are happening in these small little bodies, like, or, you know, large for the teenagers, but especially for little ones. A lot of times they don't know what to do with these big emotions that they have. And it comes out as this behavior that is disrupting their learning, disrupting teaching, disrupting the learning of others. We have to approach behavior much in the same way we would approach teaching academics. We have to help lay that foundation. We have to model it for them. When I've got a big feeling and I say, I'm really mad about this, I'm going to take a deep breath and work through it. And one thing, like, you wouldn't teach one phonics lesson to a child and expect them to now know how to read.
Right.
It's the same with behavior. It has to be explicit. It has to be repeated. And it has to be taught in a way that the student can understand. When the behavior is occurring, when you have those big moments where there is a disruption, that's not time to learn. That's time to de-escalate. That's time to regulate. That's time to bring that student back to a place of calm so that they are able to learn later. We could get into the science of it. I've done the research of what happens in a child's brain when they're in that fight or flight mode. Yeah. There is no...
It's off. Yeah. I talk about that all the time.
Self-preservation, and they're not able to learn in that moment. Mm-hmm. We have to bring them back to that place where they are able to learn. So yeah, that's not the time to teach behavior. That's the time to regain composure. And you teach behavior before and after a behavior occurs. And I saw in the comments, behavior is a form of communication. And absolutely it is. I've done entire PD sessions on how to interpret behavior as communication and determine the function of behavior. So speaking to that point, when we do have a student who is engaging in a behavior that is them communicating something to us, we can't just take a behavior away because that's taking away that student's ability to communicate. We have to teach a replacement behavior that serves the same function, that communicates the same thing, but in a more appropriate way. Like, we're not telling a student, you're not allowed to be frustrated, you're not allowed to be angry, you're not allowed to be sad. You can have all of these feelings. Your feelings are valid. The way they're expressed may or may not be as classroom appropriate as we'd like them to be, but we have to teach them how to express that, how to communicate that in a way that is safer, in a way that's more appropriate.
Yeah, in order to do that, we need to know what they're communicating, right? So that's where that behavior, we can actually see that that is a signal, right? Yes. And that's what I talk about a lot in my coaching. It's like, you know, when we're having feelings, whether it's us or our students, they'll manifest in different ways, and it's observing and seeing what is the root cause of that.
Right.
And so that's what we're doing with anything. And that's what we do with behavior with our students too. We need to observe, check in. We can have a conversation with them. We can, you know, look at the research and strategies. Look at what is this behavior communicating, like your professional development that you do. And know that once we, you know, it's easier to just be like, stop doing that.
Right.
But it's not going to last and they're not going to learn. So when we take the time and figure out that root cause, that's when we know how to redirect that behavior that still gets them that function they were needing with that community in that healthier way.
And that doesn't mean that, you know, the student shouldn't have consequences for behaviors. Like, obviously there are consequences of actions, but we have to make sure that the consequences that the student is receiving or that are occurring due to the behavior make sense. Consequences are educational. You should learn through a consequence. Punishments, you know, you might be able to control a student's behavior a little bit, like through fear or shame, which I am not advocating
for. That's not the compliance, whatsoever. The box checking route we were talking about before.
Exactly. Yeah. If you want long-term behavioral change, that has to come through explicitly teaching the appropriate behavior, the replacement behavior, and giving the student a way to communicate the same feeling and be more present in the learning. A punishment will take them away from the setting. A consequence is a learning tool.
Yeah. It keeps them in that setting. And it's like, yes, I learned that when this happens, this, like, it's a natural consequence versus like, oh, my teacher did this to me.
Yes. Yeah.
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 Yes.
One thing that I see a lot is a student will lose recess for any type of behavior. And often losing recess, it's not occurring within the same moment. It could be hours later. It could be the next day. It's not directly tied into the behavior that was occurring. And so when the punishment doesn't match the behavior, match a natural or logical consequence of the behavior, then the student views it as something that's being done to them. The example I give in my book is if you have two students in your classroom who have been fighting, yelling at each other, not like a major fight that would have to be like broken up, but if they've been really back and forth, okay, you don't get recess today, you're both sitting out. Well, then you've taken the two, you've separated them. They're sitting out now through recess, probably stewing about the fact that they're not getting to play. And so-and-so got me in trouble and my teacher made me sit out at recess. Nothing is being taught through that. They're not learning for next time how to resolve a conflict appropriately. All you're doing is punishing the act. You're not actually solving the root of the problem. Yeah. The learning is
cause. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. 100%. Okay. I'm going to do one more question from our doc, and then we're going to hop over to all the awesome questions in the chat. Yeah. Does that sound good? I did see a question of, will this be available to watch later? Yes. So wherever you are watching this, well, actually, I'm not familiar with X. I think it becomes a replay, but I'm not 100%. If you go to the Educate and Rejuvenate YouTube or Facebook, it'll be there. And I will also be getting this on our podcast feed. It'll be scheduled for tomorrow morning. So you'll find it there too. So you can definitely find this, share it with whoever you would like to share it with. All of our episodes we've been doing in this series, I've been interviewing a ton of our presenters. And if this is your first one, make sure that you check out those other ones too, because we have so many experts for joining us at Educate and Rejuvenate Summer 2025, including Rebecca. And we'd love for you to join us at the event too. It's happening next week, a week from tomorrow, which blows my mind. Kind of freaks me out, but it's fine. No, we're going to have so much fun. It's going to be such a great time. Okay, the very last one I wanted to make sure that we touch on is that, because they see this with so many things in teaching, is the fear of not doing it right. And I feel a lot of us worry about that with inclusion. Like, what if I try and I do it wrong? Mm-hmm. How can you help teachers shift from fear or overwhelm into a place of curiosity and confidence?
So I think just having a healthy, not fear or worry, but like a healthy anxiety over, am I going to do this right, shows that you probably are. If you're nervous, if you're actively seeking information and talking to colleagues, talking to other teachers, coming to podcast episodes like this, that's your foot in the door. That's your first step. And just trying to continue that. Try something. If it doesn't work, okay. We tried it. It didn't work. We'll go back. We'll try something else the next day. But being willing to take that first step to even try to learn more and try to incorporate those practices into your classroom, that to me shows more confidence than if you just walked in like, oh, I've got this. I know exactly what I'm going to do, because none of us do. We've been teaching, you know, there's teachers that have taught for decades. A coworker of mine retired at the end of May, and she had been teaching for 43 years. And she still is like, I don't know everything. She's still seeking. She would come to my classroom like, hey, I've got this kid. Can we talk about him? Can we brainstorm some things? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Seeking out someone else, bouncing ideas off of someone else. That's the way you build your confidence.
I love that, because we aren't meant to do all this alone, right? Yeah. That's why we're here together today having this conversation, and why we have 547 of us in the chat, like all like, you know, or watching. More of you, come chime in the chat. We'd love to hear from you. But again, like, that is why we're here. That is why we want to support each other, because none of us know everything about what to do with every student or what to do about teaching this subject or doing that thing. We always just do the best we can. And we learn and grow as we go. So yeah, don't need to worry about doing it all right, for sure. Okay, I want to make sure we get to all these awesome questions. So we had Tara. This wasn't a question. She just joined from the orthodontist office last week this year. The doctor's office. I love that.
It can be some waiting room entertainment.
Okay, so Lynn says, high school inclusion becomes a different animal. How can we build equity when the diverse learner educator does not have the content background?
So I'm assuming that means the co-teacher that's come in as the special education teacher doesn't have the content knowledge of like the certain subject in the classroom. Like,
yeah, Lynn, if you'd love to add extra context in the chat, that's what that too.
That's what I'm thinking, and that's the angle that I will take. So I taught early elementary for a very long time. My math knowledge kind of stopped at multiplication tables. Then I get to sixth grade. I took a sixth grade resource position and co-taught sixth grade math with the math teacher. I had not done least common multiple, greatest common factor, you know, tape. What's it called? Some kind of like measuring thing.
Yeah.
I had to learn it along with the students. And so I would go to the teacher. We would try to use some of our common planning time to go through the lesson. I would ask, okay, show me these steps. But then in the classroom, if I wasn't super confident about it, I would even pipe up and say, hey, Ms. Ponder, I need you to do that again. Can we slow down? Let's break it down into smaller steps. And we would do it again. And the kids who were getting it when she was doing it quickly, it was a good extra practice for them. And the kids who needed it broken down, mm-hmm. like I did, because I wasn't as familiar with it, it was a good way for them to be able to see, oh, it's okay to ask questions. Because a lot of times, especially our older kids, they don't want to take diagram. Thank you, Linda. Tape measure, but I knew that wasn't it. Our older students, they don't want you to think they don't know something. They don't want to be embarrassed that other people are getting it faster than they are. So for me as a teacher to also be in the room, be like, hey, I need us to go over this again. Like we need some help over here. We could break it down. And then when I learned it, we could do our small group. We would work it through a little bit more during independent practice. But as long as both teachers in the room are equal parties, like that, it wasn't, I mean, obviously she's the math teacher. She has the math content, but she did not treat me, the co-teacher, as someone beneath her. We were both seen equally as the teacher, and that really helped. And then a lot was on me. I would go through, if I knew what the lesson was, I'd go through it with her, but then I would also do a little bit of research myself in order to be prepared for the class. I'll be treated as an aide. That's very hard. I speak to that in my book. I've had some teachers that I've worked with who were like, oh, can you go make these copies? I'm like, no, I cannot.
No. Yeah.
It's, and that can be tricky. That has to be that professional relationship. They don't always have common planning. See if there's a way that you can at least get a copy of like the lessons before.
And I think that's where a conversation might need to be had too. So I think we have a podcast episode about how to have difficult conversations that is mm-hmm. going to help you with that. So make sure you check that out on Educate Rejuvenate the podcast, because in a professional setting, we often mm-hmm. do need to have like conversations that are uncomfortable, but they may not even realize they're doing that. They might even feel bad when you bring it up, right? Yeah. So it's just you can bring it up in a way that's not like derogatory or saying like, you're a bad teacher, or I can't believe mm-hmm. you're doing this to me. But you can bring it up in a way that is like, hey, this is what I'm seeing. Can you tell me your perspective? And so I really think it's appropriate to have boundaries.
Like we are a team for the students. What can we do to make learning happen more easily for them? Mm-hmm. Yes. Which book? My book, Blueprint for Inclusion.
Yes. Her book is called Blueprint for Inclusion. You definitely need to check it out.
I have a copy up here on my bookshelf that I would stand up and get, except I'm wearing pajama pants and I don't want you to see that.
So Lynn, we are both Teacher Goals authors, right? So you should definitely check out her book, Blueprint for Inclusion. And then also I wrote a book with Teacher Goals
I can reach this one without standing. Here it is.
Amazing. I feel like I should grab mine too, and we can like have our books. But in my book, I talk a lot about boundaries and communication, and because mine is a coaching book for teachers about like not burning out and all of that. So again, check out my book too. It's called Educate and Rejuvenate. That'll help you with like having a hard conversation like that. So you got two great books on your list there.
Summer reading.
And again, if you come to the event, Educate and Rejuvenate Summer 2025, the link is right at the top of this video. Just go to educateandrejuvenate.com/summer2025. I will be teaching a lot about those strategies as well at the event. And then Rebecca will be going even deeper into all of this behavior. Like, we only touched on the first one. Mm-hmm. So I wish my coworkers were here. I'm outspoken and have no issues. Well, you can share this mm-hmm. replay with them. They can definitely check out this conversation or tell them to grab Rebecca's book, my book. Come to the event. We'd love to have you all here as a team. It'll be a great time. It's a great team event. Tickets are $5, you guys. So you and your team, you can come together for less than a latte and, you know, chat all about it and mm-hmm. how you can apply it this coming school year. Okay, next question. Okay, and Tara, she has this situation. She added after, okay, this wasn't a question. I just don't know what to do. She said, I've attended Train the Teacher for co-teaching and have been co-teaching and providing inclusion services for many years now. My question or struggle is that, this is like a lot of what we've been talking about, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so let's see, I totally lost my spot. But it's not just, she thinks it's just about putting the kiddo in the gen ed room. She doesn't even share the goals with the gen ed teacher. I don't want to step on toes, but it's making my heart for the kiddo hurt.
Yeah. So I know some districts, some states, they're not supposed to share, like sharing the IEP can be touchy because it's like, who's actually supposed to see the whole thing? Who's not supposed to see the whole thing? I feel like if you have any direct working relationship with that student, you need to know what's in that IEP. If they won't give the whole IEP, if you can do like an IEP at a glance form, I have to make one. I know there's a lot of school districts that the software they use, you can like hit one button and it will generate an IEP at a glance form. I do not get that honor of pressing a button. I don't think it would be stepping on toes to ask, hey, while this kiddo is in here, what is something that we can and should be working on? What are the goals? Because I don't know how long the ID teacher has been teaching, but I know not too long ago, putting the student in the gen ed classroom was the extent of inclusion. Mm-hmm. And she might think, or he or she might think, that that's sufficient, that, okay, they're getting to be around their non-disabled peers, but it does need to go more than that. And the fact that you want to do that, use that to your advantage, like, hey, while he's in here, I want to make this time meaningful for the student. And I don't know what kind of working relationship you guys have had in the past, whether, you know, she might not think you want to do more, or you might not think that that teacher thinks you can. Just having that conversation. And that's where Kelsey's book is helpful in that, because it is teaching is hard, because you're with these people, all different personality types, different instructional styles. We have to be able to have those hard conversations professionally and at least have a good professional working relationship. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just open the door for that conversation. Hey, while the student is in here, I would love to make the time more meaningful. Can I see what the goals are? Can I see what accommodations does the student need, so that you can get a little bit deeper into that inclusive education rather than just proximity to learning?
Right. And I love what you said. That was really a good point. The teacher may or may not, especially depending how long they've been teaching. And some teachers, they're just like, oh, I've always been doing it this way, so mm-hmm. that's how I'm gonna keep doing it. Yeah. And so it could be an opportunity for them to learn, or maybe even just share like an example. Hey, this is what I'm doing for this student. Like, what are you doing? You know, like,
right.
And it might just like kind of get some conversation going too. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's see. And Tara, let us know if you have any other thoughts or questions there. I love what Charity had to say here. Okay, I have a very hard time accepting taking away recess. Oh, yeah. I mm-hmm. can get on a soapbox about that one. We had a post that I did about that because, again, those of you who follow Educate and Rejuvenate know that I am very, very into nervous system regulation, right? And one of the ways we do that is through moving our body. So when you take away recess from a child, you're literally taking away a potential solution to that. Like, you're taking away their chance to regulate and to move and to process their emotion. So try having them walk around the playground. If something needs to be done, don't hold them inside. Yes, yes. Absolutely. Yes. Then they can still do that movement. Yeah.
I have preached that until I have turned blue. Like, if you, especially if, but they haven't been able to sit still. I've not done any of their work. They've been up moving around. So I'm going to take away their recess. What?
And you wouldn't believe, I mean, you probably would because you do this too. Like, how many comments we got about, well, then what? Like, it's impossible to not do that. It's like, but there are other ways, other things you can do.
Yeah. So if you are going to do something that is incorporating that recess time, make it something that is going to be more productive, like walking around the playground. Yeah, that's a great way to de-escalate yourself, get yourself back emotionally regulated, just taking a break, walking around. You can have, if it's two kids that have been arguing, put them together. Okay, next time I want to hear what your plan is. Next time you guys have a disagreement, how are you going to handle this? Have them come together and talk about it and make a plan and then say, okay, hey, well, the next time it happens, remember you guys said you were going to do X, Y, Z when you got into a disagreement. Have you tried that yet? Put the responsibility back on them to handle the situation rather than just taking it completely away. That's not resolving anything. That's not teaching anything.
Okay. Here's another question. Is there a place for the paraprofessional in the inclusion classroom?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Paras are, like, I was a para for years before I started actually like in a teacher role. I did inclusion. I helped in a math classroom, like some co-teaching with that. There's absolutely a place for a para. Paras are, in special education, a paraprofessional is your greatest resource, especially if they are going to classrooms with the students. They're able to see what's happening. They're able to be a participant with the student. Absolutely. They're like utilize it. If you have access, I would love to have a paraprofessional that I could have go into some classrooms while I'm doing other things with other students. If that's an option that you have, take it.
There's 100% always a place.
Always.
Yes. No. No Paris jobs are in danger. We're like, please. Okay. So what do you think about creating a safe and secure environment for every learner? I mean, being empathetic, if you can make them feel that they are important, will it work?
Yes, but it has to be done specifically and explicitly. You can't just declare this classroom is inclusion. How are you going to create that safe and secure environment? How are you going to make sure that each of your students feels they belong there? They need to be able to see themselves reflected in the materials that you use. You need to make sure that the flow and setup of your classroom is accessible for every student. You need to be able to have a way for the students who are coming in there to share with you or with others. That will make that safe and secure environment. They have to learn that it's a safe space, and that doesn't happen by accident. That is something that you have to do with intentionality. One thing that I do at the beginning of the year, I don't start the school year with a list of classroom expectations. I have a blank sheet of paper, and we build those expectations together. What does a safe and secure classroom look like, sound like, feel like? How can we make sure those things happen? What are some things that we need to do in our classroom in order to keep it safe and secure? I mean, positive reinforcement essentially works. Positive reinforcement works. I mean, we go to work, we get our paycheck. That's a positive reinforcement for going to work. Like, positive reinforcement isn't just something for kids. That's, I mean, anyone is positive. Like, we're all positively reinforced. like I do laundry so that I have clean clothes to wear. That's a positive reinforcement of doing laundry. Now, positive reinforcement is different than randomly rewarding behavior. Okay, so positive reinforcement is something that is specific. A reward doesn't always fulfill the same need. It doesn't always meet the same need. It's not as necessarily tied into a behavior. Another aspect of positive reinforcement is that whatever you are using as that positive reinforcement has to be reinforcing to that student. So you can't say, oh, if we do X, Y, Z, then, or let's say, okay, if you make a, if you study and you make a 100 on your test and your mom puts it up on the refrigerator, some students might not like that. Like some kids might not want their work publicly displayed. Like if you put our, I've seen a lot of them like out in the hallways, it's like awesome work or brag work. Some kids don't want that. That's not reinforcing to them. And they could know, oh, if I make a really good grade on this, my teacher's going to put it in the hallway and I don't want people to see that I'm, that I did that. So you have to figure out what's reinforcing to the student.
Yes, 100%. Okay, Lisa has a follow-up on the recess. Walking around the playground during recess is a great idea, but I would have to stand out there and enforce that, or the student would just play. I can't always do that.
Okay, well, it doesn't have to be walking around the playground. It could be walking back and forth on the sidewalk by where you are. It could be doing different kinds of calisthenic exercises that are in one place, jumping jacks, lunges, burpees, you know, whatever the kid wants to do to get that that sensory experience, to get those wiggles out. It, if walking around the playground isn't going to work for that student, then that's not what you do. You find what does work for you, for your situation, for the student that you have.
Yes, great, great question, great follow-up. Hi, Wendy. Hi, Sarah. Good to see you all here. I love the idea of starting with a blank sheet and building expectations together. Yes, that does give such buy-in when you involve the students in, in creating that. Okay, those were some amazing questions. I think we got through them all. So thank you for bringing such great questions, everybody. I love when you do that. And if you want more from Rebecca, she will be speaking at our Educate and Rejuvenate event again this summer. Can you give us a little teaser of what you'll be sharing there?
Yeah, so we're actually going to dive more into motivating those reluctant learners. The acronym I use for that is CARE. So we say we show the students we care. That stands for collaboration, authenticity, relevance, and engagement. We're going to go over each of those 4 points, come up with very specific strategies that you can use to implement each of those to build those relationships with your students, meaningful relationships, not just the stereotypical, oh, if you build relationships with your students, your classroom should be all sunshine and rainbows. That's not the case. And there's ways that we can set up our classroom and set up different activities for our students to motivate them to really engage and to really buy in. And that student buy-in is going to be the best classroom management tool that you can have.
Oh, I cannot wait for your session. And I just love that you continue coming back to share more goodness about inclusion every year with us, something new. And I'm just, you know, it means a lot to me that you keep coming back and doing our event again. So I'd love for you to share why is it that you keep coming back to our Educate and Rejuvenate event each year?
So I love this because, yes, we cover a lot of educational practices and strategies for the classroom, but it also doesn't forget that the teacher is a person first. We are human first. And I know it's a very cliche saying, you can't pour from an empty cup, but genuinely, you can't pour from an empty cup. You have to make sure that you are not burning the candle at both ends. You have to know how to take care of yourself so that you can take care of others. And as a teacher, as a parent, we have a lot of kids who need us all the time. We have to be able to be there for ourselves so that we can be the one that can give to them.
100%. We have to be able to, and that is why we are so focused on that you can educate and rejuvenate, or you can educate and, you know, do whatever it is that you want to do. We have these fun signs that we're doing that we educate and do whatever else we love doing. So, Rebecca, would you like to share yours with everybody?
Yes. So mine is going to seem like a very educational word, but I promise there's more. It goes deeper than that. So mine is I educate and advocate. And advocacy, it's not just me advocating for my students. It's not me advocating for their needs to be met in the classroom. I advocate for myself. Mm-hmm. I take those mental health days when I need them. I, you know, tell people, hey, I do have ADHD. It might take me a little bit longer to process what you're telling me because my brain is going faster than my ears can keep up with. So being able to...
Right. Like, even after some of your questions, like, wow, you just said so much good stuff. Like, you know.
So that's why I advocate. I make sure that I'm taking care of me. And that is, I like yoga, what you just mentioned. Yeah. I got my very first facial ever last week amazing. At a spa, and it was amazing and wonderful. And advocating for not only what you need in the classroom or what your students see in the classroom, but advocating for yourself as a human and what do you as your human person need, that's going to go so far in making sure that when you do get back in the classroom, that you aren't getting to that stage of burnout. And I think that's one thing that makes this conference so different is that it's not just something that's going to entertain you for a little bit, because there's a difference between escapism and actual self-care.
Yes. So 100%.
Escapism, go get that facial, turn your brain off for a little bit, get your nails done, drink your coffee. But real self-care is going to be strategies that you can use in the moment to help yourself regulate, to help yourself calm down. Things that you can use to set up routines for yourself so that you aren't as overwhelmed in the mornings trying to get you and your family ready for school, getting out the door by 7. That's what sets this apart from some of the other conferences, where it's fun and you're going to be entertained and you're going to love it, but you're also going to learn actual strategies and actual tools that you can use, some in the classroom, yes, but some for you as a person, because we're more than teachers. And I know society, like, teachers, we do it for the outcome, not the income.
Yeah.
And yes, I agree, teaching is a calling and it's not for everybody, but it's not my entire identity.
We need to be a martyr to be a teacher.
Exactly.
Right? Yes,
exactly.
We're still whole humans outside of it. Yes. And that's actually, we've like added that to the page because like it's the teacher conference that sees you as a whole human. And wear yoga pants and come as you are is the whole vibe. Like that is the event. And really the whole purpose of it is, I've noticed so many teachers like during the summer, like and there will be some teachers who are like, I don't even want to think about school during the summer, so I can't come to your event. But I'm like, listen, if you're so burned out from this school year that you can't even think about school until August, then we're just going to repeat that cycle. We're going to keep burning out to the point where summer is just like a survival break.
Yeah.
We don't want that. We want you to enjoy all 12 months of your year and not like every moment, and not that you're never stressed, but that you can come back to a grounded place, that you can regulate yourself, that you can have boundaries, that you can have a life and be a whole human outside of teaching. And that's what this event is here to help you do, to help you rejuvenate, to help you reset, to help you catch that burnout cycle before you start it again next school year, and to learn some new strategies that, like, last time on one of these podcasts, I screenshotted a comment that was like, I'm so excited to go back and try this. It's like, yes, we want you to have that too, because we want you to feel regulated, rejuvenated, like, so you can take care of yourself in the coming school year. But we also want you to be like, oh yeah, I got this idea, and now I can't wait to try it out, have some things to look forward to, so that again, we can enjoy the school year and the summer, and then they can both be wonderful. And isn't that what we want, right?
That's the whole goal. It's the whole goal.
And I love, I see Wendy at the end, Wendy from our community, sharing a bunch of awesome things she does in her homeschool, like changing locations. That's so fun. How important is the mental health of learners and teachers? Crucial.
Crucial.
Very crucial. So again, that is why you want to join us this summer. You also want to grab Rebecca's book if you loved what she had to share, Blueprint for Inclusion. You can find it on Amazon, Target, Barnes & Noble online. And then let's go to our wrap-up questions, because we just had so much goodness today. So we have a fun list of questions I like to ask each speaker at the end of these. And because we have comedy at our event, because again, we do have some escapism too.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. We got to have some fun. Yeah.
Yes. What is the funniest thing a student has ever said to you?
Okay.
She shared this one with me before. So. She was like, is this okay to share? I'm like,
yeah, make sure it was okay. As I mentioned, I taught sixth grade for a couple of years, and my boys were the light of my life. They were absolutely off the chain a majority of the time, but they had my heart, and I knew they would have done anything for me. And one day we're in a class, and one of my boys comes up to me, and he's extremely serious. He has a very serious face, and he gets right up, as I'm behind the small group table, he gets right up, leans across the table, and he looks me in my eyes. He goes, Mrs. Poe, can I expose myself to you? And I'm obviously taken aback a little bit. I'm like, so Betty, what do you think you're asking me right now? Like, rephrase that. And what do you think you're asking me? And he's like, well, I want to talk to you about something personal. I was like, yes, you absolutely can. So we have that conversation. And I told him, I said, but one thing I need you to know so that you don't do this to anyone else. I said, when you say you want to expose yourself, that means, and I told, and he lost it. He freaked out. I would never do that. I wouldn't do that to you. I'm like, I know.
That's why I checked in. Yeah.
I had a feeling that was not what you meant to say.
So I'm trying to save you from,
in the future, maybe let's choose a different word to say. And he's like, yes, ma'am. Oh my word. It was so funny. I think about him all the time. Can I expose myself to you? No, you cannot.
No, not in that way.
Not like that.
You can
not
be
like
vulnerable. That. There's a word you can use.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, Indrajit says, thank you for such a wonderful podcast. A lot of takeaway for me to my classroom. We are so glad you were here and brought all your questions. And again, if you joined your time here, come join us next week at Educate and Rejuvenate. It's going to be a great time. And we already had you fill in your blank. We got ahead. Talked about how inclusion can feel more rejuvenating too. So
we covered everything, I think, just
we did
a roundabout,
in a little roundabout way. Okay, I do need to pick the giveaway winner. I think I might have forgotten last time. So this is where I'll
start to remind you. Like, don't forget.
Stop. Okay, so Karishma, you are our gift card winner. So please email hello@educateandrejuvenate.com. And it's rejuvenate with an E. We've had a few people lately like, I emailed it, I didn't get it. We realized they did rejuvenate with an I. So it's rejuvenate. Yeah. So, okay. And what was the name of the book again, please? Rebecca's book is Blueprint for Inclusion.
This is my book.
I love the cover. As soon as I saw the cover reveal, I was like, Rebecca's book is so cute.
I know. So do we have a second? I can kind of talk about
the
cover. Okay.
Yes, please.
So this was not the original cover. I had a whole separate cover designed that I just wasn't loving. And then the designer did some different covers and nothing was just feeling quite right. So that was in January, I think. Mm-hmm. Rewind to October. I had wanted to get a tattoo to commemorate like the writing a book and teaching.
Yeah.
So I had seen drawings of like an open book with flowers coming out. And I thought, oh, it would be cute to get my students to draw the flowers. So the students drew me flowers, and I took it to my my tattoo artist, and she put the whole thing together. And I'll show you.
Oh my god, do we get to see? Oh, cute. Yes.
So this was the tattoo that I got in October, and it's the book, and it has all my students' drawings, and she combined some of them because there's 24 students. I couldn't have 24 flowers, so like. Took leaves from some and flowers from some of the kids drew hearts, butterflies, smiley faces. So tattoo artists put it all together. I got the tattoo in October. So fast forward again, back to trying to get this cover finalized, and nothing is feeling quite right about it. I was talking to a friend of mine, a local friend here in Birmingham, and he said, he's like, you know, it just doesn't look like teacher, like it's too, I don't know, it was just kind of boring. Cover. the old cover just wasn't giving what I wanted it to give. He's like, what if it looked something more like kids had drawn it to like show that it's like for kids? And I was like, oh yeah, that's a great idea. So I take that idea back to teacher goals, and we're talking about different things, and I was like, you know, something like this, like my students drew the flowers in the book. And Brad, I think it was Brad, he was like, that's the cover. I was like, oh my gosh,
it's so funny when that happens.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what happened with my book. I didn't know what to title it. And then I realized I had the name for 3 years with my event, and then it became our whole brand name. Like, I mean, when it's right there under your nose.
So all of these are, and then the designer added the color, because obviously my tattoo was just the line drawings,
right.
The shading and the colors. And so, yeah, my kids drew all of these.
That's so sweet.
So if you look inside the, I also got them to, they all signed it because they,
I
don't want to show it for too long because it's their names, but they signed on the cover since they drew it. But on the page where it's like the acknowledgments, like cover design by, it has the teacher goals designer, but then also it says, and Caroline Gray, who was my tattoo artist.
That's amazing.
Well, that's how it came to me.
I love that. I love hearing the story behind it, because there's always so much behind a book. Like for me, it was like figured out the title while we're on a road trip, and I'm just like, I cannot think of the right name. And then it was like, oh, what about Educate and Rejuvenate? Like the event we've been doing for a few years. And then it was like 10 minutes later, wait, we've been wanting to rebrand because Wife Teacher Mommy felt like not inclusive enough.
Mm-hmm.
What if we rebrand to Educate and Rejuvenate? And it just kind of all fell into place.
I think like in my mind, you've always been Educate and Rejuvenate. Like even when you were Wife Teacher Mommy, like it just,
I know.
Educate and Rejuvenate. So, but yeah, people will say, oh, you got your book cover tattooed. I'm like, actually, the tattoo came first.
That's amazing. That's a good story. Well, and I love that your tattoo artist is now credited in the book. She probably was I never saw that.
I reached out to her. I was like, hey, would it be okay if we used this design on the cover? And she's like, oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah.
That's so amazing. She's credited as a cover designer.
I love that so much. Oh, well, this has been so much fun, Rebecca. And I love how we covered everything in such a roundabout way. We have people putting your book in their cart, as they should. It's such a great book. Charity says, so many books to read. I know, so many good books, I promise. Rebecca is hoping for it. So check it out.
And always, like, if you have, as you're reading, you have any questions, comments, anything, I live in Instagram DMs. So please reach out that way. I love to connect with everybody.
Anywhere else you'd like them to follow, reach out, anything before we go?
Instagram is probably your best bet. Okay. I'm somewhat active on Facebook, but my email address, if you want to just email me, is hello@RebeccaPoeTeaching. And that's Rebecca, R-E-B-E-K-A-H. I've never found my name on a Coke bottle. It's okay. It just makes me unique.
It does. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
And then see you tomorrow. Yes, you'll see me tomorrow. I've got Erica Terry, and I think Lenny is joining us too. I wasn't sure. It was like, I'm not sure if she's joining us, but we've got more Teacher Goals author fun happening tomorrow at noon, yes, my time, which is 11, 12, 1, 2. So feel free to come join us tomorrow. And then join Rebecca and I and all of us next week at Educate and Rejuvenate, summer 2025. We hope to see you there. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
If you loved what you heard in this episode, don't forget to hit that follow or subscribe button wherever you're listening or watching. And hey, if you're ready to take this work even deeper beyond just a podcast episode, you'll love the book that I wrote with Teacher Goals. It's called Educate and Rejuvenate, a 3-step guide to revitalize your teaching, renew your spirit, and reignite your passion for life. This isn't just a book you read, it's a whole experience. With your copy, you'll also get access to a full PDF workbook and exclusive reader-only course modules in our mobile app, designed to help you not just consume the content, but actually apply it to your life, even if you only have a few minutes at a time. So if you're ready to make Educate and Rejuvenate not just something you listen to, but a lifestyle you live and a mantra you carry with you every day, grab your copy on Amazon and head to educateandrejuvenate.com/book to claim your bonuses.
Every time I listen to that.